I'm going to call upon Bill to respond to that.
Right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good evening, comrades, brothers and sisters. I'm not quite sure why I was really invited along here tonight, because I couldn't ever say that I've been an ardent admirer of the capitalistic system. Like everyone else, I've also seen the terrible injustices, the terrible poverty, the terrible decisions, the terrible misuse of power that have been so eloquently placed before you. But as a trade unionist, as a trade union official, and as a member of the Labour Party, I always stop to think, and I try to get things into a perspective. And the perspective I try to think about is, first of all, what do you want? And then secondly, probably more important, how do you bring it about? I don't argue with any of the aspirations of people who want more democracy, and I don't argue with any of the aspirations of people who object to being manipulated by those who obtain power by use of economic and political means that those perhaps not as well versed as themselves or not as well placed as themselves can bring about. But you see, when I address myself to all these particular problems, and we've had talk here tonight about the turn of the century, and unfortunately, although we've now had full suffrage for over 60 years, we still do not have a situation where we've removed the need for people to control. And I would perhaps like to say one or two things about that. We talk about eliminating capitalism internationally. And I think to myself, well, how do we bring that about? If it could be brought about by people who were well-meaning and people who could influence others, and there have been tens and hundreds of thousands of them since the beginning of the century, we wouldn't be having any sort of debate tonight, because if we were only talking about logic and common sense, we would have had a system whereby wealth, as has been quite rightly stated, should be created on the basis of need and not greed. And you've got to address yourself to the question as to why this has never come about. Now, capitalism didn't just come about by accident. And without going into the international context of it, one only needs to look back and say what happened in this country. Because you see, even when you had an agrarian economy, which wasn't really based on capitalism, it was based upon force. And it was based upon the strongest man taking everything. And it wasn't based on democracy. And the person who was the strongest and the most able took advantage of those around him. And that, I would say, precedes capitalism by many thousands of years. It goes right away back to biblical times. It probably goes back to times before that. It goes back to the times of the first traders, when food was the commodity, when he used to get paid in food. So capitalism isn't really the problem. The problem is the attitude of the human race. And the attitude of the human race can very easily be seen in the way things are in this country at the present. Now, there's been a fair amount of condemnation of the Parliamentary Labour Party, and indeed the Labour Party in general, since its formation early in the century. And although it hasn't been a perfect party by any means, and I'll be the last one to defend some of what I would call the right-wing activities that it's been involved with, it has managed to do one thing. It's managed, on occasions, to persuade the electorate to put it into power. Now, there are many groups that I would regard, such as the Socialist Party of Great Britain, Workers' Revolutionary Party, various other groups who have the same idea and who basically want a radical transformation within society. And they've been going a long time. It's been quoted tonight that this particular party has been in existence longer than the Labour Party. Without being cynical, I would ask how it comes, under the circumstances that we've been under for the last 80-odd years, that as far as I'm aware, it's never returned anyone into a position of power. Because I would have thought there would have been places, deprived areas, because just as the same as we've got deprived areas now, we've had them during other slumps, and I would have thought it might have been possible to have got some benefit. Actually, if you look back to the interwar years, you find that it wasn't so much the left-wing parties that had radical and good principles behind them, You found actually it was fascist parties and far-right parties that started to get a little bit of popularity. And I would warn a lot of people that you've got the same position today, whereby a lot of people who are completely disillusioned seem to find nationalistic and racist parties fairly popular. And no one can tell me at the moment that there are more people who are wedded to the left than there are to the far right, because that doesn't seem to be the indication. We look at the Communist Party of Great Britain, a party, in my view, that over the years has tried fairly hard to bring about socialism. And I understand at the latest count, they've got 1,700 members nationally. They're a fairly influential party. They have a fair amount of influence within certain trade unions. And they've got 1,700 members. I think what we've got to look at is try and find why it is over the last 80 years, when there's been so much deprivation, when there have been so many people who should have been attracted to the sort of things that is being put forward by those on the left, how we haven't managed to fire their imagination. And you say, I don't accept that it has only been the policy of the Parliamentary Labour Party that's turned people away. Because you see, if you look back to 1909, you had a Liberal Party that was elected that probably brought about as much reform, and I'll use the dirty word reform, and brought in benefits to ameliorate people's problems than there's been this century. I also remember as a kid living through the Attlee government from 1945 to 1951, a time when the country was trying to recover economically, and that government did carry out a fair number of radical proposals. And you know what happened to both those governments for carrying out radical proposals? They were ditched. And they were ditched by the very people who should have been supporting them. Because no one wants to think that there's some sort of sinister forces working to keep the Conservative Party in power. The Conservative Party continued to be kept in power because working people continue to vote for them. They don't vote for the Socialist Party of Great Britain. They don't vote for the Labour Party. They may vote for the Alliance, and more of them seem to be doing that. And at the moment, they're predominantly voting for the Conservative Party. So I hope no one's going to come with the idea that the only way the Conservative Party keeps in power is because there's a small number of people with tremendous influence who are voting for them themselves and persuading everybody else to vote for them. It doesn't work like that. They're able to keep in power because they're able to put a message over that the ordinary man in the street can relate himself to. In my view, it's the wrong message. But I don't believe that everybody who votes for them is stupid. They may be misguided, but they're not stupid. We've got to recognise that many people vote for the Conservative Party because they themselves are basically greedy. And a lot of people vote for the Conservative Party because of fear. Fear of the unknown. We'll look and see what happened last time, 1979, when the Labour Party put forward a fairly right-wing manifesto. It certainly shouldn't have frightened anyone. It was offering to make things a little bit better here, a little bit better there. And what happened? There was a landslide against them. The Labour Party at the moment appears to have lost votes because it's taken the very correct decision that it wants to pull out of nuclear arms. Not entirely, but a reduction and a move towards getting foreign bases away. And if they would go a little bit further and get out of NATO, they'd probably lose more votes, although it would be right in my view. And I don't for one minute say that the Labour Party, led by Neil Kinnock, is going to solve all our problems. But I would ask each and every one in here tonight, under the circumstances, does anybody really think that if there's a Labour Party election, if the Labour Parliamentary Labour Party gets into power in 2 years' time, does anybody really think that that's going to be worse than what we've got now? Because this government you've got in power now is the worst one that's been seen in Britain this century. And there are people who say it's got to be rid of. Now, I follow the line of a lot of other people. I think it's worthwhile making certain contributions and perhaps putting up with a little bit of deprivation on occasions to try and at least get a political party into power that will try and offer a little bit of care, a little bit of security to the population. Because they've got none now, and it's getting less by the day. Now, I'm not one of these who says Neil Kinnock or the Labour Party at any price. It may be that if the Labour Party was to suggest certain things, I would come to the end of the road, and I'm getting precious near it now after what happened to Les Hopefield, and I might come to the end of the road and I might say, well, I can no longer go along with the Labour Party because it's not carrying out the sort of things I think it was set up to do. I think it's going for popularity too much instead of going out and campaigning properly and spending time explaining to people why the policies are right. I think the Parliamentary Labour Party and the Labour Party in general failed miserably during the miners' strike. And I think there'll be very few people in here can tell me anything about that. And I don't say that out of conceit. It's a matter of fact, I went through it. And the fact of the matter is that during the miners' dispute, the Labour Party failed to come forward and tell the public what it was all about. They allowed themselves to get into sterile, and that's the proper word, sterile debate about the role of law in disputes and about democracy as far as ballots went. Now, I'm a very great believer in democracy. I'm a great believer in people having the right to vote. I'm a great believer in everyone being allowed to go and pick what information up they can get before the vote. I'm a believer in meetings like this. I'm a believer in open and full debate. But at the end of it all, when people vote, you've got to accept the decision. And unfortunately, whether we like it or not, if you look back over this century, you'll find that mostly that decision has been in favour of the capitalistic system we live under. Now, that doesn't make it right. It means, in my view, that somewhere along the line, those who are opposed to the present system in this country either haven't gone out and campaigned properly, or they haven't understood the problem properly, or they haven't been good enough to explain the problem properly. There are a number of reasons, but I think it's got to be accepted that as far as propaganda goes, and as far as effort, the Conservatives and the forces of the right have been able to leave what I would call the left standing for the best part of a century. Now, all right, they've got a marvellous start. They've got any amount of cash. They were clever enough to realise, as media communications improved, they were clever enough to realise that they had to get control of newspapers, and they did so. They were clever enough to realise they had to get a hold of radio, which they did 40 years ago, and they've been clever enough to realise that they've got to have the television running very much their way. And certainly one of the biggest ironies that I've ever witnessed is the situation where we'll have someone like Norman Tebbit condemning the BBC because he says they're too critical of the Conservative Party. It's a bit too much like when people are actually critical of their owners. Because that's what it amounts to. But you can go out into that street tonight, and I bet out of 10 people, you'll find 4 or 5 that just might agree with Tebbit. Not because they've thought about it, but because they've heard it. And it's the way they've picked it up. Because you see, there's another very vital thing where once again, in my view, the Labour movement's failed. And it's the subject of education. Because I haven't seen much change in education over the last 40 years since I started school. You started school and it was drummed into little children, and that's where it all begins. It used to be that the sun never sank on the British Empire. I'm not quite sure what the corollary to that is now, but that's where it all begins. And you know, we have a situation in County Durham whereby we've got an education authority under the County Council that have done such a good job, have actually saved more money in education than the Conservatives asked them to. And when you ask people, suppose it's socialists, why does it come about that in County Durham we have less children stopping on after 16 years of age for further education than anywhere in Britain? They don't know how to answer you. But when you suggest that they should perhaps be spending some of the money they're saving on getting someone who knows about education to come and look into the problem and advise them, oh, that's almost too much for them. So I'm not for one minute defending all aspects of the Labour Party. But I will say this, regardless of its faults and warts and all, taking into consideration the type of society we live in, which is a form of culture when you get right down to it in Britain, working class culture, we know there's two classes. I keep it quite simple. There's exploiters and exploited. And within that, you know, you get your various classes. You get those who are at the very top, the top 2% that own the 80% of the wealth, and you get down to the top 10% that own 90%, and so it goes on. And it hasn't changed much. When Wilson looked into these things about 10 years ago, there was very little change from the actual investigation that took place, I think if I remember right, about 1910, just before the First World War. I think it was about 3 points difference. It was 10% owned 90% instead of 8% owned in 92%, something like that. Very little change. And I accept the fact that when the Labour Party does get into power, it won't be able to please everybody. But, as has been pointed out, there are limitations in which this country has to work. And yes, if it could come about that you would get international socialism, of course that leaves a lot of thoughts in people's heads. What does that mean? If you could get a truly international brotherhood where all human beings work for the common good, the ideal. Certainly suit me. I think there's a lot of human beings that wouldn't mind, because there's a lot of human beings in one form or another whose whole life is spent exploiting those around them. And I'm not quite sure how they would fit in. But if we look at things the way they are at the moment, we talk about revolution and revolution by the ballot box. We've been trying to get that, as I say, since we got full suffrage, including women, from the early part of the century, second decade of the century. You've got it now. You've got democracy now. Anyone who wishes to have a vote can have a vote. I'm not aware of anyone who's not allowed to because of their political views or anything like that. Just the same as the furthest right Tories got a vote, so has the furthest left winger in one of the socialist groups. Works just the same. So that will be no change. The only way you're going to bring about revolution by the ballot box is to persuade people that you've got the sort of policies that are going to benefit them. And if it comes about that you've got to recognise the fact that the vast majority of people in this country are not terribly interested in politics until it begins to affect them, if you recognise that, you recognise the enormity, if not the impossibility, in the foreseeable future of bringing this sort of thing about. So my criticism of a lot of the left groups is, yes, marvellous ideas, but they don't really give me any tangible way forward. They don't give me an insight into how I would go ahead and help to bring these things about. Now, I continue to listen and I continue to learn. And possibly somewhere along the way, someone will be able to point out the ideas to me. But you see, in the world at the moment, we've got various types of government in power. We've got capitalist states like this one, democratic capitalist states. We've got democratic capitalist states, such as you've got in the Eastern Bloc, where it's state capitalism. Not as much voting there, mind, but you know, I accept the point, you've got state capitalism. I don't know of any modern society where these principles of socialism apply. Now, I may have missed something out. I have heard it said on many occasions that there are a primitive and semi-primitive tribes where you do have this type of society. But you see, they only operate satisfactorily when they're in isolation. Once they've got to start trading with other people, or once you start going into primitive countries and you talk about mechanising them and providing them with nuclear power stations or showing them how to be more efficient in agriculture and learning them how to trade and that, it seems that it's not long before you've either got a colonel's government or a totalitarian state that's going under the name of communism, which it's nothing of the sort. It's totalitarianism. And as I say, my only argument, and I think really this is what the debate is about, isn't about the desirability of the end result, which I think most of us who regard ourselves as socialists of one sort or another want. There's no question about that. The question is, how do you go about it? And my question tonight certainly is, how do you begin? And we'll start in this country, because this is what I understand, and I think this is what most of us understand. The people we live among, One can go on ad nauseum about people who started off on the left of the Labour Party and who end up either being Conservatives or next best thing to them. I was reading about Hartley Shawcross the other day, a man who perhaps the older ones will remember was Lord Chancellor, I believe, in the Labour government in 1945. Now, as soon as the Labour Party went out of power in 1951, it just went into business. And as it said in the little article about him, there was a red background in his portrait that had been painted of him, and that was wrong because it was many years since he'd either thought of or talked about socialist policies. He was like lots of others. He just used the Labour Party. It was a convenient thing to be in. It was a career. And then he very quickly moved into another form of business when there was no longer a position of power for him. But you see, I keep harking back to this one central thing. If you're really talking about democracy, and you're talking about a revolution within democracy to bring about change, there's only one way you can do it, and that's by persuasion. We're not going to get people persuaded by coming and talking in meetings here tonight, where I've no doubt everyone's converted. I don't imagine there's many Tories or Conservatives in here. I don't imagine there's many people from the right of the Labour Party in here. The way you've got to persuade people is you've got to get into institutions. People who have left-wing views have got to get into the Labour Party and say that they're stopped there. And unfortunately, those in militant haven't quite managed. But there are still a lot of people with views not too dissimilar from the comrade speaking earlier tonight who say that by being in the Labour Party, it just might be possible to change things, even if it's just a little bit, for the better. Because the Labour Party's moved quite rapidly to the right. It's never very far to the left, but it's moved quite rapidly to the right in recent times. And I'll tell you why it is. It's not because of any sinister undertones. It's because the people concerned, who've tried to weigh up the situation and who are looking for electoral success, rightly or wrongly, and I personally believe wrongly, have come to believe that the only way they're going to get public support is by being fairly moderate, by talking about gentle reform, by warning people that you're not going to get rid of unemployment overnight. It's going to be a slow job. And I think they also realise that if they were to get into power and they were to pursue what I would call hard left policies, which I would greatly appreciate, it won't be very long before the rest of the world and a lot of people in this country make their position untenable. That's the reality as I see it. I've no doubt this will lead to a lot of good discussion. And as I see it, it wasn't my position to come out tonight to defend capitalism or indeed the Labour Party. I would suggest that to get capitalism changed isn't going to come about by talking about revolution. It's going to come about by going out among people and getting the majority of them behind you in the belief that you can make a better society, get rid of a lot of the cynicism that's present in society today, because the 7 people out of 10 don't really think it makes any difference which government's in power. Now that may fall into line with the thinking of the Socialist Party of Great Britain, but you see, I want to see some concrete proposals put forward as to how you bring about this desirable society which everyone wants. I thank you for listening patiently. I've actually had 8 seconds less than my colleague here. Thank you.